Thank you for coming. My name is Dave Browariki. I am the Bishop of the Oregon Synod of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Although this is not a bishop presentation, this is a personal presentation. Sandy?
Oh, I am Sandy Rubiku, and I am an artist and have been one, almost all my life. And I'm an oil painter and show mostly the gallery that handles my work consistently is the Blackfish Gallery in Portland. If you're ever there, and in the Pearl, please go visit.
And buy something would be good. Don't
have to say that.
Sandy and I have been doing a series of classes this week called Clay Jars and Crackpots, three session series, and this is the third. On Monday, come on in and grab the Bible, although you can't read it to the story.
As soon as I adjusted the light.
Okay. Monday, we did a presentation on Martin Luther, who was one of the significant Reformation leaders in the 16th century in Germany, Lutheran Reformation, and Lucas Cranach the Elder, who was an artist. And we talked about their collaboration together. I think one of the most interesting things for me about that is that Luther and Cranach were friends. And Sandy and I could not think of any other religious leader and commissioned painter in a movement who had a personal friendship. So we were quite interested in how, in imagining how that might have shaped their work together and their Reformation work and their expression of that. Tuesday, we did a session called The Creation Cabal, which was about a collaborative art poetry show that we did on Genesis 1 through 11 themes, and talked firsthand about the kind of collaboration that we have and why that's meaningful to us. Today we're going to talk about paint, poetry, and prophecy, and the point of this session would be, do you want to take a stand at that?
Well, I thought after talking, since we've been here this week, to narrow it down, I would say prophecy and the redefining of what that has meant to me. I never did equate an artist with a prophet or for yourself, especially in academia where in receiving your degrees, that's the farthest thing they want you from. It is prophecy in many ways.
So the conversation is about two things. One, how we express the inner passions and leans that we have of people of faith, the whispers and the things that we feel in our hearts, how do we express those and how we share those, and then secondly, how we in our diversity of gifts and personhood support and be in conversation with each other. And as I've worked with Sandy, we've both realized that the arts and religion do not have much conversation with each other anymore. So her friends have been sort of shocked, appalled, and curious.
Very curious.
About our yes. Conversations. So we're going to look at three images that Sandy did, three poems that I did, and three scriptures that prophets did, and invite you into that conversation. How does that sound? We good? Mm-hmm. All right. On with the show. Sandy lives on the Central Oregon coast, Newport, Oregon. And if you've been there, the ocean, Pacific Ocean, comes up against the coast, and there are rock and clay sand cliffs, which are part of the realities there. A very beautiful area. Part of the reality on the coast is erosion of those cliffs, and where the sea comes in and strips away the sand and the mud that's holding things up. And so you have houses like this, which are falling off the edge. And Sandy likes to paint those things because she has an ecological bent. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say why, but that's something that you sometimes have painted and incorporate. But I want you to know Sandy's context. This picture I showed you not because of the young man flying a kite, but again because of the hills and back. That's Newport, isn't it, or
mm-hmm.
close to?
Yeah.
And
Nine Beach.
What you don't see in pictures. I looked all morning for appropriate pictures. Couldn't find them. Nobody takes pictures of the Oregon coast with the pipes and the wires and the things going down the sandbank, which you sometimes see when you walk, you know, drainage pipes and things like that, which are the result of people living above them. So that's her context. And Tuesday, when we talked about our some work, a painting in a poem we had done around the Tower of Babel story, right? Genesis 11. I had reflected in my poem some 9/11 themes with the World Trade Towers that were destroyed. And when she reflected on that and did a poem, she said to me, I can't paint New York because that's not where I live. It's not my story, it's not my environment, it's not my reality. So her painting was about houses on the cliffs and things like that. So that's just, I want you to get some context, all right? So that is a Newport cliff, right? And this is not a finished painting. This was a beginning of a painting. So why don't you explain, Sandy, about what's going on here?
Well, I wanted to do those cliffs. And when those cliffs cleave off, you know, from erosion and then building decloths, the plastic white pipe that they use for plumbing is suddenly exposed and kind of up there. And on the black is like a sewer pipe. And always worries me as I walk the beach to see them exposed. So my idea was to use a fairly flat space and put the viewer right up against those cliffs so that you'd have to look out at those pipes. And this was a beginning painting of the start of Jacob's Ladder.
Come on in. Yeah. Grab a Bible if you wish on the way in. That's optional.
And about this point, didn't you come to the studio?
Yeah, I was in Newport, a pastor in Newport, before I was called to be a bishop, so I was Sandy's pastor. And I would do studio visits every once in a while and see what she's up to and have her tell me what she's thinking and feeling and painting. And I really was intrigued by this image, even though it's not done. Matter of fact, I like it much better this way than, the in-between. We'll get there. Yeah, we'll get
it's
there.
It's gone through many layerings.
but what's the story here? What's the biblical story?
Jacob's ladder.
When you think of Jacob's ladder, what do you know about that story? What comes to mind for you?
But wasn't it that he had come to a place to sleep, and this was his dream that angels were going into heaven and marked it somehow? I can't remember the mark.
Right. So he's in a strange place. We'll talk about that. Goes to sleep, has this dream, marks it. What else do you know about Jacob's ladder story? Not a trick question. Well, then we ought to read it. Open your Bibles to Genesis 28, if you would. That's what we're going to look at. Jacob, you may remember, had a twin brother named Esau. Jacob and Esau are born to Isaac, one of the patriarchs of the faith, and Rachel. And the name Jacob means heel, as in used car salesman. Someone who grinds you under their heel if they get away with it. If you remember the story of Jacob and Esau, when the midwives come to deliver, a hand is stuck out first. And the firstborn is very important, right? And in Jewish, you know, so the midwives always tied a red string around the first child born. So the child sticks their hand out first, which means they're born breech, but that's not. What's that called? My wife's not here. But then the hand is withdrawn, says the story. And you get the sense of Jacob trying to pull his brother back so he can be the firstborn. And Jacob's the one who's born fully first, but his brother's already been marked as the firstborn. Why? Well, you get inheritance and birthright and all sorts of stuff by being the firstborn. So they call him the heel or the stealer, the creep. And then you have these stories of Jacob and Esau where, remember, he steals his brother's birthright for a pot of beans, right? His brother's hungry one day, he says, give me some beans. He says, only if you give me your birthright. There's that story. There's a story you may remember from Sunday school of when his father Isaac is blind and dying, and he calls in Esau, his oldest son, says, I'm going to die, fix me a final meal. What do you want, Dad? Now, fresh venison would be good, right? Remember the story. So Isaac goes out to hunt for his father. Okay. Jacob, who got along with his mom really well, they cook up this plan. They run to the refrigerator, pull out a frozen venison dinner, put it in the microwave. Esau puts lambskin on his arms because his brother's very hairy and he's not. Remember that? And he puts on his brother's cloak, which smells like his brother. And he goes into his father and says, here's your dinner, Dad. You know. And Dad says, come closer. And he feels his arms and smells the coat and says, you're back really fast. Well, the Lord rewarded me that dinner was in the backyard and I just shit in with him. And so the dad has his dinner and then blesses Jacob with the blessing of the firstborn. Now, once in that society, the words of blessing are released, they can't be recalled, right? So Jacob receives, not only does he have his brother's birthright through the pot of beans deal, but now he's stolen his blessing as well. Isaac comes in, here's the tail end of the blessing, says, no, this can't be, Dad, you got to have a blessing for me. Isaac lays down, Esau says, you're dumb, you've always been dumb. Your brother's going to rule over you for the rest of your life. Jacob, at this point, runs away because his brother's going to kill him. Go figure. Right? So that's the setting for this text. So would somebody read for us Genesis 28, 11 through 22, either from the screen or your Bible, whichever you want to do?
Jacob came to a certain place and stayed there for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones of the place, he put it under his head and lay down in that place. And he dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, I am the Lord, God of Abraham your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you and to your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Then Jacob woke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put under his head and set it up for a pillar and poured oil on the top of it. He called that place Bethel, but the name of the city was Luz for the first. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone which I have set up for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will surely give one-tenth to you.
Okay. So Jacob's on the run, right? He's packed a simple bag, he's taken off, goes to sleep, grabs a rock. What's the story here? In just regular terms?
He had a dream that the angels were coming up. Went to heaven.
Going up and coming down to heaven. Anybody ever learned in the song, We Are Climbing Jacob's Ladder?
Yes.
We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder, children of the cross, right? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that song?
Going up.
It just says going up, right? And it's us, not the angels. I mean, the song is like no way right about Jacob's ladder in terms of what the text is, but nonetheless, somebody wrote that song for some reason, but the text is different. They're going up and down, which means we've got a thin place here between heaven and earth. This is a connection place, right? And when Jacob wakes up from sleep, he says, whoa! I hit a thin place, right? And he's afraid. Why is he afraid? You're just not very conversant today, are you?
90 degrees outside.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do all the talking. Sandy, I'm going to do all the talking. You're going to be bored.
Because it's a little bit too close to heaven.
A little too close to heaven.
It's like, God's pretty close. That's pretty awesome to be that close to God.
Especially if you're sort of a shady guy. Like Jacob is, maybe. Okay. This is none other than Beth-El, the house of God. Beth is Hebrew for house, El is God. It's none other than Beth-El. So he calls the place Bethel. Nice, the house of God. Called Luz at first. And God has said he's going to bless Jacob, right? Right? In the first big paragraph? Mm-hmm. What does Jacob do at the end here?
He
he makes a vow saying, well, God, here's the deal. If you keep me safe, if you give me food to eat, get me jobs, and clothing to wear, and if you bring me safely back to my dad's house, my father's house, then you can be my God. Right? And that's sort of bizarre. Okay. So the question is, you know the story now. Oops. What's Sandy doing with this story?
She has the angels on the ladder.
She's got the angels on the ladder. So, Sandy, what are you saying?
Well, as I was thinking, if this is the place and they're climbing up and down, what have we done to the house of God, basically, is what I was thinking.
What have we done to Bethel? What have we done to the house of God?
Right. And so that was where I was with that, the gift, if this is it, what have we done as humans?
Is that legit? You let her do that? Reapply the story to her context, her world. If I'm hearing you right, if the earth is holy,
right.
You know, if life is holy, what are we doing to this sacred place? It's one of the places that Sandy and I connect is with environmental concerns. Well, okay, let's do the poem, and then you can ask me the same question what I'm doing. So the conversation here is how the scriptures are living in our life. You know, through our passions and our expressions. For an artist, Sandy's going to paint that stuff. That's how she's going to express her passion. So here's a poem called Luz. Up and down, high and low, angels may know where to go, but I am lost, confused and slow. Pipes and wires, creeping cords, optic fibers in the boards, fire, flying fire in the walls, laser lies, my lifeblood stole. Up and down, high and low, angels may know where to go, but I am pummeled in the flow. Cities spreading like the phage, sharing their disease and rage, duplicating without age, absent sage, sacred page. Grab a rock now, go to sleep. Find a place outside the keep. Give me bread and clothes to wear, vows of abstinence I'll swear. Pipes and wires, creaking cords, optic fibers in the boards, Bethel bears my destiny. Surely seraphs hear my plea. Up and down, high and low, with the holy cragsman go. Weave your way through tangled web. Angels will bear up our dead. Don't know if that's a good poem or not. What do you think is going on in my noodle? What are my passions, fears, concerns? How's this conversation shaping up?
Well, we're destroying our earth, aren't we?
Yeah.
The wires and the pipes and the drainage onto the beach, and you know, and maybe you're feeling a little bit of that inside yourself or seeing it.
I think so. I mean, you can psychoanalyze me. I'm not sure that I sit down and plan poems. They kind of just come out. And this came out because I saw Sandy's painting and because I know the story. Right? So, yeah, the environmental concern, my fears, what we're doing.
Nature isn't going to be stopped.
Yeah. Cliffs are going to disappear, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Nature's not going to be stopped. God's not going to be stopped. Our foolishness is going to catch up with us. Keep running, Jacob. Go, man, go.
And with global warming, the accelerated erosion along the coast.
Yeah, as a side light, these houses that are now starting to fall off the cliffs were told they had 100 years easy before the erosion caught up with them.
They're gone.
Some of them are gone.
What are the lasered lies in my lifeblood stalls?
Flying fires in the walls is sort of electricity. I'm thinking the internet, electricity, communication. I mean, I don't know. I do careful words as a living as a pastor. In poetry, I get to not do careful words. So, I think it's symbolic for me of our communications and the lies and the technology we have.
I love the vows of abstinence, I'll swear.
You been there?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to do this anymore. Is it true to the text? I mean, as Sandy and I ruminate about our passions and fears as we interact with our world, as we try to connect our stuff with the Bible.
I have a question for Sandy. Is there, your picture looks to me like it has the angel's wings look like spinal, you know, the vertebra in some ways.
Oh.
Is there?
Yeah.
It looks
so
like
there's
what?
Something very vertebra
incarnational about both the picture and the verse, I think. And I see some echoes of that in the verse with cords and optic fibers and things like that.
That is really nice. I wish I could say yes. But yes, as you say that, yeah, that's especially in the, you know,
right.
Yeah, that would fit. A lot, Dave and I have a lot, he comes in and asks me why, and I say I don't know. And in sorting this out, I'm thinking along those lines, and yes, that would make broken back, broken form, broken spine. Yeah.
Neither one of us quite know why we do what we do in art and poetry, and Sandy's really helped me, give me permission to explore that aspect of spiritual depth, you know. She does it through visual arts, I can do it through poetry. I think, well, not this is the prophet, but we'll look at the prophecy with the next painting, and I think the prophets are doing that. What does it mean when a prophet says, the word of the Lord came to me, and I knew? Ever had that experience? Inside intuition, just kind of this thing just sort of set for you, right?
I have a question for both of you, both from the poem and the picture.
Yeah.
Why aren't the angels, or why would you not have the angels climbing the plastic pipes or the drain pipes?
They'd slide off.
There you go.
No.
But they're only going one direction.
Right. Well, the pipes, when they're when you see them like that, they're not really right against it. They kind of weave out, and so that was kind of what was going on. Plus, in climbing some of those cliffs myself, escaping very high cliffs, that's a connection with me trying to get up. You know.
Someone mentioned the angels are going in one direction. Which direction are they going?
They're getting out of there.
Yeah. Either going up?
Yeah.
Going. Either going down. This one looks to me like she's... It is looking at the rung below. No, that's just interesting. Well, Sandy never, she didn't finish this picture. This is not finished.
No, see, I was really surprised when this came up in the, because this was first state.
And I liked it a lot. I was really disappointed when
she
improved it. she painted the angels in and did more work here.
Right.
And I didn't have the heart to tell her that she ruined the painting. But she figured that out herself. Because what she did, I came back one day. I want you to watch closely now, okay? This is one of my technological tricks. You see the top of the cliff here? Watch that very closely. And I'm going to show you what I found a couple weeks later when I came back to your studio.
Right.
A red wall behind it?
Right. Oh, we wish.
Jacob's ladder is behind that. So if you buy this, you get two paintings. And this is what she... Explain yourself, ma'am.
Well, in the meantime...
That's the same painting?
That's the same painting. Yeah. I change a lot. See,
it's the same canvas.
Same canvas, yeah. It's
you're hiding paintings.
Yeah. Yes, it's a... this is based on beach... cliff graffiti, which was too delicious not to use, and its help, it actually was this, help, it don't exist. And then...
scrawled on the beach by one of those angels going up.
Into the sand, which a lot of people do. And that sort of existential message, you know, could put one deeper into the cliff. And then I thought, well, I'll use this cliff image with things either floating or kind of working their way up and down the cliffside. And there's a guy who comes through Newport once a year who carries his cross. And he has his backpack, and that's pretty accurate. It's attached to it. And so he is taking the cross in one direction, which is one that I have some problems with. So I set up in the other direction, the other angle, the people and prophets and Mary going in the other way of the cross that, and Christianity that I am finding for myself that through my learning and study, and of course with my collaboration with Dave, has really been evolving. And then of course the whole thing of a fish, you know, just the hand up again, just controlling or trying to control and change fish. So that's up there with a hand, a human hand, taking something out of context and out of water. And then the dog, I love the dog. I play the dog constantly in different poses. And I always base my dogs on real dogs. I don't make them up. These are real dogs that strike me funny, and I think they can speak for humanity, and they can speak for me in ways that allows me more freedom. And so that was how the Jacob's Ladder.
So is it the same painting? Is it an outgrowth of the same painting? Is it the same energies, the same passions? You know what I mean?
Can you show me where the dog is?
Yeah, I just saw
it.
Huge
head. Now.
Yeah.
Took me a while to find the eyes.
And then, and then the mermaid, you know, of course, with us. And these are based on. And then the prophet person, the prophet image is based on Mexican folk art. And when I've gone to Mexico, I try to buy as many of them because I think the immediacy and the visceral quality of those carvings are wonderful.
It's great to go with, you know. You want to see how the angels are doing on the painting, and you come up, you go, what happened? And then you ask any, you get a conversation, she says things like, well, there's the mermaid, of course. Like, what do you mean, of course? Why is there a mermaid? You know, in the middle of the class, I don't get that all. So it's a fun, enriching spiritual conversation, but it has to do with our own spiritual sensitivities, our own spiritual journeys.
Right.
And the interesting thing for us is reconnecting that to the Bible stories, which some of these images. So we'll go forward, huh? Yes?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you photographed the other painting.
Yeah, so you could see.
I know. I may be the only one that has the...
This is a painting called Purification of Man.
Right. Well, this the woman with the sprigs out is from the Botticelli painting of springtime. And it's one of the nymphs that's there. And I have a lot of wolves in my painting because I live but fairly close to what's called White Wolf Sanctuary, where a woman saves the white wolf, or has them there, a rescue part. And it's an incredible operation. She has it up in the top of the Coast Range, 40 acres. And so I use them as parts of nature that are disappearing by our own hands. As with the salmon, so it's a cross between an underwater scene and salmon escaping, going upstream and gasping. And so I've always been a fan, I've always been a fan of Little Red Riding Hood. So it somehow seemed appropriate that the wolf, and then man as being humanity, needing to be purified, and that's a Purex bottle the wolf has, and I figure we're to the point. Or maybe Purex might do us some more for that stuff. that's the quality. And these are dialogues that I have with myself as I paint. In other words, I entertain myself. I'm real cheap for entertainment. It's just me. And this is...
Her husband Dan sends it up to the studio. Go mutter for a while.
And again, the grasping and stuff of the hands and the wolf and the stuff tearing and what's happening today. So that's kind of...
So here's my reality. I'm sitting at home and I got nothing to do except watch TV, so I pull up Sandy's website, which I do sometimes, to write poems on her pictures. I've just gotten over the great Jacob's Ladder debacle.
Yeah, it took you months to get over that.
And you pull up this one.
Yeah. And I pull up this one.
Things are getting easier.
Right. Any Jacob's Ladder ties here? Or am I the only insane one?
Fish Ladder.
Thank you, Fish Ladder. Thank you very much. Yeah, so absolutely. Up the ladder, salmon go, battling against the flow. That's exactly how I start the next poem. But before we get to my next poem, I wanted to do another text. For you. So if you would open to Amos chapter 4, or just use the screen. Another Bethel text, right? So we've got Jacob's Ladder with the salmon, we've got Bethel, because of the name of the story. So this scripture comes to mind. And I don't know why, but when I get into a relaxed place, prayerful, meditative place, and look at Sandy's paintings, stuff comes. And this text came. So someone read that for us? This is Amos... is a guy who does not claim to be a prophet, just God told him to come and straighten folks out. The first paragraph there, you got to read with lots of sarcasm and accusiveness. Anybody want to do that? Accusiveness is not a word. Yeah.
Come to Bethel and transgress, to Gilgal and multiply transgression. Bring your sacrifices every morning, your tithes every 3 days. Bring a thank offering of leavened bread. And proclaim freewill offerings, publish them. For so you love to do, O people of Israel, says the Lord God.
Beautiful.
That's great.
I gave you cleanness of teeth in all your cities. Oh, that's a good line. And lack of bread in all your places. Yet you did not return to me, says the Lord. And I also withheld the rain from you when there were... still 3 months to the harvest. I would send rain on one city and send no rain on another city. One field would be rained upon, and the field on which it did not rain withered. So two or three towns wandered to one town to drink water and were not satisfied. Yet you did not return to me, says the Lord.
What's Amos trying to say here?
Ungrateful.
Absolutely. The come to Bethel, that's a worship call. Time for church, come to worship. Everybody come down. Come to Bethel and sin, right? Come to church and kill people. I mean, it's that sort of thing. So Bethel and Gilgal are twin towns. Come to Bethel and transgress. To Gilgal, multiply transgressions. That's sarcasm, you know? Come bring your offerings. Publish them in the bulletin. You like to do that, don't you? Let people know how generous and faithful you are. God says that makes me sick to my stomach, right? And then that's the phrase that you said, that's wonderful. Give you cleanness of teeth in your cities. Nothing caught between your teeth because you didn't have dinner, right? Give you cleanness of teeth in your cities. So this is a prophetic utterance of condemnation. What's the title of Sandy's painting?
Purification.
What's the impetus here? Yeah, does that text fit the painting? You can say yes to anything I ask you to say. I mean, there are common themes there, right? At least there are to my kind of bizarre mind, you know? So I've got Jacob's Ladder in my head, I've got Fish Ladder, I've got Purification of Man, and I've got Amos 4. What can I tell you? So here's my poem, called Return to Luz. Up the ladder salmon go, battling against the flow. Ancient wisdom used to know, oh, angels trod here high and low. Come to Bethel, rape Gilgal, seize the prize and hit them all. Coyote, my quest prepare, volunteers pause in the air. Howl, great spirit, steep despair, wake the grizzly, rouse the bear. Come to Bethel and transgress, give your tithe, go spend the rest. Earth forgives and breathes our life. Gaia greens despite the strife. Faithful farmer, Adam's wife, silent under all in life. Come to Bethel, multiply. Fill the earth, then cheat and lie. Rains shall stop and cities die. People wander, strangers sigh. Publish freedom, don't ask why. Promise bread, corn, wheat, and rye. Come to Bethel, Gilgal see. Pilgrim to insanity. These are my demons, right? Anything there reminiscent of the text or Sandy's painting? What? How do you make connections in your faith life? Where do you? How do you listen? Where do you hear? Who do you talk to? This, incidentally, is what? 8 feet by 12 feet?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's not a small painting.
I especially like the cleansing focus right there, where the bottle is and the hair is falling forward. It's such a, I don't know about the hand, paw reaching out. That's a little, I'm not sure what that does for me, but that image of that cleansing and the nakedness, that is just really powerful to me. And I like how that goes with the idea of the verse that we need to get back, you know, to some
a
better time or a simple. Maybe that's a childlike kind of the nudity, the, I don't know.
I wouldn't expect any of you to paint that picture or write that poem. But the question we're trying to play with, or I'm trying to play with, I think we're trying to put it together, part of my question as a pastor is, how do the scriptures become real for you in your place and time? You know, what connections do you actually make? Is there a current voice to a prophetic utterance like Amos's?
Yeah,
do we still need the purification? Do we still need the forgiveness?
Definitely.
So this is contextual for Sandy. The coyotes, the salmon, this is Pacific Northwest, right? I'm also a product of the Pacific Northwest. So the grizzly bear, which is not in there anywhere, I threw in, you know. You want to tell them where you got that image, Sam?
This was based on an article, it sounds like, in National Geographic, where they were delousing people. And so it was... It struck me so strange that they were still doing that, and people were standing and accepting this delousing. And the person delousing, I don't think I would have trusted to delouse me. And it struck me in that context. So.
Do I see two crossing lines, like a cross and a crosser, or is that purposeful?
Where?
From my angle here, the line goes through about the shoulder.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Right. Right.
And then there's a vertical line coming up from the hand paw up through the fish.
Right. Yeah. Now, a lot of things happen in the process of painting that you stand back. That's why you dance back and forth so you can look up close and then walk back and see it. Where that just happens, and you go, oh, that's not. I always call it a gift from the art gods. And so if I'm aware enough, I will let that be and not try to control or change it.
Where does, I can see purification of man, but where does the lady come in with the?
Well, that is.
What's the purpose of that?
Well, she's there sort of clueless, and it's a real takeoff from the Botticelli painting, which is in reference to art history, and there's just the female form was used in sort of this way of celebration spring, but sort of aimless way of just standing there. And so I brought her into this painting, and she's eyeballing this salmon.
So she's watching.
Yeah, she's probably eye contact, probably. Shock, yeah. And yet she's still stuck, which I thought was interesting how Botticelli put the plant in her mouth. You know? And so I kept that over. And it's almost like as she's coming up out of the water, thinking like that would just
kill the fish.
Yeah.
Now, knowing absolutely none of that, because I'm artistically totally ignorant, right? And knowing none of what Sandy just told you, she appears here in my poem.
Right.
As Gaia. Earth forgives and breathes our life, right? Breathes
right.
our life. Right, that?
Right.
Silent. Earth forgives and breathes our life. Gaia greens despite the strife. Faithful farmer Adam's wife, silent under all the night. There's an environmental illusion, right, about what we're doing to the earth again. But the sort of cluelessness that Sandy just mentioned, because she's a good artist, I sense that cluelessness, right? And that shows up in my poem that way. Which is just fascinating to me. I mean, she's helped me connect with a different part of my spirit and a different part of my reality. I love Sandy's paintings because she works you over pretty hard, right? You want to follow the fish up, then you see their wolf and your eyes go back down here, and then you got to figure out what's going on here. And then these guys, and then you see her, where she's looking. I mean, your eyes just, they travel. She makes you ask questions and look and try to put things together differently. Don't you, Sandy?
Yes.
All right, we got one more picture for you. Watch closely. We're going to have another transformation. This picture exists. But she did another quite similar to it.
Right.
And I want you to see the similarities. This one's, is it purification of man or just man?
No, this is man with sacrificial side of beef.
Go ahead.
Well, there, in art history, there are a lot of sides of beef painted. Meat, you know, game, all that stuff. And there, and wouldn't you know, I would forget his name, I will. Anyway, he painted a lot of sides of beef. I always liked how he painted them and that. And he, to make sure that they were as bloody and gory and stuff as he could, he would get one from the butcher and then periodically throw blood on it so it was always fresh and he could get the reflection right off of it as it came. And I always, and so taking again from that image and that used a lot by artists in the past, and then my whole thing about meat and cattle and feedlot and being from a farm and how we desecrate our animals and, you know, use them, I thought of using that as what we need now to satisfy what we call sacrifice. And so I stuck it there, hanging almost in the air, being pushed down. She's trying to be an angel. She has a halo and she's in her bra and pants. And I use sometimes my friends purposely, and this is a psychiatrist friend of mine who gets up her nerve and does come to some openings. And then when she saw this, the receptionist says, I knew it. Anyway, she's a very willing person to do this and allows me to do it, and she has her high heels on. And then again, this whole thing of repeating this figure again, repeating the purification, how does that go with sacrifice? And then in the back is from, again, Mexican folk art, in the Day of the Dead, they have guys, you know, in coffins and stuff. And so this is one of these little figures that's a dead person there, lying kind of open. And I also purposely put a halo on the neck of the side of the. That's about the short end of it.
This was fun for me because I, with these two images, I did not go to Sandy's studio and ask to talk to her about them. I was just home, downloaded them, and was reflecting on them. So once again, I don't know about the Day of the Dead. I don't know the history of beef and
Besides the beef and babies. I don't know a psychiatrist either. But I know she's a wonderful artist because the painting works on me. By which I mean it stirs stuff up. If you want to insult Sandy deeply, tell her paintings are nice. Because that means nothing happened. You know, and she wants you to enter into questions with her, right? How, and I don't know, I'm making this up, you know, but how does our faith, how do our sacrifices, you know, how does our religion help us purify what's going on? Is there forgiveness in that? These religious, deeply religious questions are in that. So I've got one more poem, which I did on this one, called Nightfall and Luz. So I got a series of three paintings, that's why you got these today. Luz, Return to Love, and Nightfall and Luz. And you can tell me what scripture I had in mind when I'm done, okay? Salmon absent, creek bed dry, rocky plain with hushed reply, darkness present, moon on high, come to Bethel, come and cry. Bones of death all scattered round, friend coyote makes no sound, absent now the quail and bread, rain can't fall, it's all been said. Come to Bethel, Gilgal see, painful now the reverie. Tell me, mortal, about these bones, tell me about the grizzly's home, tell me how you once were free, show me now your destiny. Prophesy and speak to death, powerless to give them breath. Watch and see creation's power, come to Bethel, keep the hour. Salmon jumping, life restored, teeming beauty, joy adored, halos present, moon on high, come to Bethel, rise and fly.
Redemption.
Yeah, I can be positive sometimes, right? There's hope. It's a redemption poem, isn't it? Yeah.
These bones shall rise again.
Yeah, Ezekiel and the dry bones, right? Yeah. I mean, this is a much darker picture than her first one. So it's nighttime, the salmon aren't there, the animals aren't there, just this dead hunk of meat. You know, what have we done to the earth? Can we fix it? Those kinds of, anybody else ask those questions? Huh?
About what? About that painting?
You got any angst in your life? About the earth or your own sinfulness or your own brokenness? How do we process that as people of faith? That's our, how do we process that? How do we talk about that? How do we image that? Where can we bring out our deepest fears?
Are you talking about earth ministry? Is that what you're talking about?
Whatever's inside of you. Yeah, earth ministry for us. I mean, these are kind of environmental stuff that's going on here, but what keeps you awake at night? You have to be the earth ministry. What keeps you awake? And how does your faith and the community of faith help you process that? Are you an Amos who goes and says, die? You know, I mean, look what you're doing, folks. Come to Bethel, you know, come to church and be hypocrites and all that sort of stuff. Where do we process that stuff?
Come to church and be hypocrites?
Well, that was Amos, right?
Explain yourself.
Yeah, come to Bethel and transgress.
Okay.
That was Amos, that's the way he dealt with it, right?
Yeah. If this speaks mostly to the environment, there isn't anything in here about the cruelty in the world, about the wars and the... For instance, I was reading some history about the Korean War, and where we lost 68,000 men, and but we killed 1,300,000 to 3,000 civilians. I mean, it's just those are such phenomenal figures, and so your picture is just addressing more of the environmental issues rather than the human condition.
The Ezekiel story is about war. The dry bones are dead soldiers. Look what's happened to Israel. Can you bring God's people back to life? You know, of all these wars and that sort of thing. So that there's a tie there to the war issues.
I think there's a lot of blood in that picture. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't know if there's an equivalence between that and war, but it certainly is a violent image.
Mm-hmm. The hillside should be green, and it isn't.
Yeah, I was thinking of our life, our respect for life, with how we treat animals and how much is enough for a sacrifice. Does it take one side of beef, two, three, an entire feedlot?
Is that a cow?
Yeah, it's the, yeah, right, yeah, if you, when they're splayed.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me is obviously you would see the sight of beef hanging in an abattoir in a slaughterhouse, and now here it's hanging in all created. It's as if we've made all of creation one big slaughterhouse.
Right. Yeah. And then the, you know, Linda, my friend, bless her heart, holding it, you know, she's trying to keep a lid on it, basically. She's trying to make it work with what it is. She's solving, in a way. Of course, that's
patting. I thought she was kind of dancing on it.
Yeah. Well, she couldn't.
Yeah, she also looked like she could be blessing it almost.
Yeah, right.
Liturgical dance outside of beef.
Be right. I'll use that
next time she's running away.
I have learned not to try to interpret Sandy's paintings. And when I ask her about it, she generally says, what do you see? What does it say to you? What do you feel? And it's not, I mean, she explains to me 1,000 times as I try to get it. It's not what I'm trying to tell you in a painting. It's a conversation I'm trying to invite you into with me, right? How much beef does it take? You know, it's a very bloody image, you know, so you might respond to it that way. I have learned to engage her paintings through poetry. That's just what works for me. And so the question for me as a pastor has been, gee, I wonder what the prophets are doing. Are they trying to invite me into a conversation? What are the scriptures doing? Is it trying to just tell me this is doctrinally the way you need to be? Or is Amos saying, good grief, would you help me with this? What are we doing here? Is Ezekiel saying, don't you see what I see about the war and the devastation and the death in our culture? Can we fix this, people? And where's God's place on that? Jacob on the run. What do you do when you run into a holy place? So it's fun for me to learn to engage scriptures in the way that Sandy invites me to engage your art. Is there a conversation to be had here? How do you deal with this?
Well, I can say too that as, you know, painting as I do, which is a choice, you know, I've trained in realistic Western style art, so this is a choice of how I paint. And in living with that choice, I get a lot of people's reaction where they want nothing to do with it, which is fine. It makes it harder for me as an artist to get this out for other people to see. Not many galleries want these. This is another 8x12 foot painting. And when I put these up in a gallery, they tend to overwhelm. So,
7 foot sided dead cow.
And so people will come in very, either they are engaged or they're not. And I think that's what Dave and I discovered with the Creation Cabal. That month, I had the people at the gallery that Dave and I showed on that, which was the month of April, 2 years ago, to see what people's reaction was. And it's pretty much, so, he's been tainted by anyway, it's pretty much they either like it or they hate it. they will either come in and be offended, which is fine. I mean, that I when I do that, I invite that. That's another thing I invite. Or they are engaged at some point, or they'll sneak up to it. They'll use his words to help look at the painting. And you can see that dialogue taking place. So, or they'll come in and want only his words. They can't take the visual. They love the words. So that's been interesting, I think, and part of our collaboration.
So what does it mean when somebody comes in and says, really nice poetry? Silence. and won't deal with the realities from which the poetry came. Feels very much like after church saying, nice sermon, pastor. Right? Like the words were stopping there, not with the implications of the faith. Or, and I think Nadia was talking to us about this past week, about people who approach her or her church. You sneak in, you'll have nothing to do with it. How do you minister to people who just don't want to deal with Jesus or church history or whatever's done to them? Her ministry would be to those folks who, for whom church feels like that. You know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense at all? I don't want to deal with that level of... And do we in the church invite people being mad at us because we had a story to tell? So that's just meandering, right? Our meandering thoughts. So as we wrap up here, anything about that helpful? Wish you'd gone hiking instead of coming here?
Well, it's cool. That'll be good.
I have one question. What is that wound in the arm?
Oh, that is not a wound. That's a patch. Yeah, it's the flag patch worn on the blue. It's just kind of an icon patch that people have on their arms, or that identify them in other ways rather than than what is it usually intended. In other words, that patch becomes what people read you at first, and then they don't sometimes get past it.
Well, who do you have standing there purifying man? Who is that you?
That's a good question. Just a...
It's somebody.
It has a halo, yeah.
But it looks like somebody who works in the meat factory because they are so... concerned about food safety, that they have to be uniform from top to bottom.
Well, and you're right on that, because I put them in, like, you know, when you work the kitchen thing and you wear the aprons, well, that's a full-length one. And again, it could be a worker. The purification of the guy is that he's so toxic that he, you know, to deal with this purification with a lot, you need the dress and gloves, the large, and the oil apron that goes to the full length, and the work boots, of course. So
I would like to encourage you, as you engage scriptures with people of faith, to think about engaging them the way you might engage this painting. Being invited into a deeper conversation about God, faith, what it means to be community. How do the scriptures speak to you currently when they're 2,000 years old? You know, is there a way to... Does Jacob's Ladder have a place in your life today? Is that this thin place, do you ever run into that place in your life? Are you ever Jacob? Do you ever get frustrated like Amos? About what's going on in life or the world, and how do we, as people of faith, deal with our present realities, honor the scriptures in those conversations, and support each other? It's kind of what we're about, I guess.
What do you do with people that pretend that global warming doesn't exist?
You just keep showing the work again.
You paint bigger.
You paint bigger. Yeah. You just nothing else you can do. You just keep at it.
Well, it's one thing to believe it, and it's another thing to do something about it. So that's my question, is what are we going to do about it? Are we going to sit by quietly reading the paper and muttering to ourselves, gosh, it's a real tragedy that the earth isn't going to be in any shape for our grandkids. What are we going to do, people? What can we do?
You know,
we need to lead. The church needs to lead, and I don't know how.
These pictures here, I've never seen bright red sun like that in breeding colors in rivers like that. Chinook, I think these are Chinook salmon. How do you get people to pay attention? You show them this picture, and then you show them Sandy's painting.
Yeah.
Right? You know? That hangs in the private collection of somewhere in Chicago, I think, doesn't it?
Did you ever see the salmon ones?
And that one's also 8 by 12 feet. It's a huge painting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you do, I don't know, you just keep up. I think what we're doing, anything that gets the dialogue, anything that puts it in.
That's why painters paint. Preachers preach, and geologists make websites. and to get people's attention, then say, you know, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to act?
Yeah.
How will we be community of faith in this? You know? And then Nadia's circle last night. It's God's tent, remember?
Mm-hmm.
So we're called to,
well, another thing, too, is somebody said on one of the Christian radio stations they listen to is they think of the earth or where we are as a hotel room. That we're not, this is not our home.
Yeah.
I don't like hotel rooms, it's too confining. I would prefer to think of it as we're a guest here.
Yeah.
And nothing belongs to us. And if, how is it when we go to a guest, we're a guest in somebody's home?
Yeah.
You know, how do we behave and whatever. So thinking of ourselves, when we think of the verse that we'll talk about, we are ambassadors for Christ, and that how do we, you know, relay what God wants to people in his home, but down here. And I find it very difficult to, I must not be an artist in heart, because I find it very difficult for myself to relate to abstract art or an abstract poetry. I find it very difficult to identify. If I were to go by myself, I don't like going to art galleries. I need somebody to come along and tell me what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
You know? And that's really good. That's really interesting. I wouldn't have seen it, but I would never have seen it by myself. I wouldn't even have come close to understanding anything or even to come up with any questions. I find myself thinking that I need to read more or I need to do something, because there's no way that I could go to a gallery and see abstract art. There might be something that strikes me, but I don't ask any questions. It's like, gee, this is really different. Okay, let's go on to the next one. I mean, I wouldn't spend time trying to figure it out.
Right.
And with poetry that you have to think about, I would have a hard time, you know, coming across your poetry, very intelligent, everything. Oh, that's way beyond me. I don't know about anybody else, but I would. You almost have to be an intellectual or somebody who reads a lot to understand anything or to even know what questions to ask about things. I feel like I'm just like a ordinary person that doesn't get it.
Well, I think part of our conversation is you don't have to get what we do. I'm not sure we get what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you get? How do each of us, express our faith in deep ways? We were sitting up on the patio before we came with Sandy's husband, Dan. He's a mathematician, for God's sake. I mean, he doesn't paint into, I mean, maybe he doesn't, you know, but he could also say, as we talked from mathematics point of view, he says, you know, there's insight, where all of a sudden you understand a theorem or a proof or something like that. And,
and then you go back and start to put it together. Is that fair, Dan?
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, no matter what we do, there are these places where God speaks to us and we hear, and then we try to make sense of it. That's what I think we're shooting at.
Yeah, I just think that this has been a particular journey that has been very meaningful for me and for Dave. And we have gestalted it. It's, you know, it's bigger than with either one of us alone.
And we've gone past the boundary, yeah, Carol.
What's the history of this painting?
The Salmon Run, that was when they cut the dam off on the Klamath River. And they killed all those salmon. They lost a generation, I think, over water rights.
Carol?
I just wanted to say, I think one of the things that you've done is kind of doubled the impact of your individual art by bringing it together and opening up this dialogue, which again opens up all these other possibilities too. I mean, art takes a risk, and you've not only risked taking the risk of having the other one, having it being seen that the other one is interpreting or explaining, but in doing so, you've just opened that conversation further to by confusing people perhaps a little bit with a new form that isn't quite what they're expecting, and I just celebrate that.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking that courageous step.
Oh, thank you.
If the bell's rung?
Yes.
Yes.
And thank you all.